And we are joined by Luke Inman of Zone Coverage for a little bonus Vikings coverage here on The Scoop. Luke, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Seth. Love to break down some football whenever, wherever, but it's a little bit more exciting when it's the Vikings and it's championship week. So I'm ready to break this game down with you, man.
Outstanding. Well, I think we got to backtrack a little bit to the game that I think the entire world has probably seen the final play, the Minneapolis Miracle, as it's been dubbed. And I've just been kind of having some fun with that throughout the week, asking various people that I've had on where they were, because it is truly a where were you moment. So, Luke, I'm going to start off. Just want to get kind of your recollection of the Minneapolis Miracle, where you were at, and what was going through your head.
Well, Seth, just to kind of recap my experience with the Minneapolis Miracle, to be honest, I like to watch these Vikings games, man. I get a little too stressed out, a little bit too much anxiety. I really do. I like to watch them by myself, or at least at home, if a couple buddies or any colleagues want to come over, vice versa. Certainly can do that, too. But my wife surprised me with some tickets, and it was nice, although I still had to cover the game afterwards. It was nice just to kind of let my hair down and be a root for 3.5 hours. And enjoy the game from a fan's perspective. Don't get to do that too often when, you know, you're in the work and field that we are. And it's tough not to be biased sometimes, too. But it was nice to be at the game, be at the bank. I got to be honest, man, I was nervous all week because I knew Drew Brees in the playoffs. You know, he's one of those guys that ultimately, at the end of the day, you can only do so much preparation for. At the end of the day, Drew Brees is going to Drew Brees. And we saw that in the second half. And I think it really deflated not only myself, although I maybe saw it coming a little bit, but the whole stadium. I mean, when you're making some of those throws that Drew Brees is making, and you can go up and down the list, you can go back and watch the film, but you know, one that sticks out is the third down, a wheel route to Alvin Kamara. We know how good he is, but great coverage by Eric Kendricks.
Yeah.
And Drew Brees just drops a dime in the bucket, man. I mean, really, truly uncoverable to really that extent. And the 4th and 10 really sticks out to me as well. Great coverage on 3 straight pass plays by Xavier Rhodes. I think he was targeted all three passes there and shut down Michael Thomas. But 4th and 10, those 4th and long situations that you just love if you're a defense, and you get Willie Snead on just a great out route. But again, not bad coverage, but just a perfect throw by Drew Brees. So pretty deflating going into those last few minutes. And then all of a sudden you go from, again, you know, a 0 to a 10, just in a matter of moments. And again, it was one of those things that you're right, man. It's one of those where were you moments. It's something that I will never forget. I'll probably tell my kids. I'll probably tell my grandkids about it. But to be honest, as special as that moment was, if they don't go win the big game now, it won't be quite as big as it could be, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. So we still got a little bit of work to do, and we got to go finish business.
Yeah, if they can bring it all the way, and end up winning the Super Bowl, then this game will be looked at as the springboard that got them there. But like you said, if they don't quite get the ultimate goal, then it's going to be a great moment. But some of the shine will have come off. But
just to stem off that, Seth, I kind of compare it to game 163. If you're a Twins fan,
yep,
you remember we've been in a couple of them. But I was at the Tigers game just by dumb luck once again, and got to see, you know, a 17-18 inning masterpiece by both teams, Tigers and the Twins. And it was one of those where I will never forget that. I think it's going to go down and probably is already as one of the best Twins games ever. But, you know, they ended up getting swept by the Yankees, you know, 5 days later. So as cool as that game was, and you'll never forget it, it's what I kind of compare to the Diggs catch, that it's going to be great no matter what. But if you can go finish the job here, I mean, that's one of those legendary plays that kind of get, you know, banked into time forever. I mean, one of those timeless plays that, again, I mean, you tell your kids, even tell your grandkids about something like that.
Absolutely. The opponent this weekend, the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC title game. And it's been a little bit of a roller coaster for the Eagles. They had Carson Wentz, looked like they were going to be world beaters, and they were for most of the season. They lose Wentz in the game against the Rams. Although, as I like to continue to point out in that game, he still threw a touchdown pass after he tore his ACL, which just blows my mind. But
yeah,
they
talking about legend status. Like, who does that?
Yeah, no kidding.
In this day and age, with the concussion protocol and just how many medical staff you got, especially knowing that's your franchise quarterback, the fact that he was able to even stay in and throw a touchdown pass, man. Repping North Dakota State pretty well, huh?
Yeah, it's unbelievable, and it's one of those things you tell people they maybe haven't heard, and they're like, "Wow, really?" But yeah, that's just Carson Wentz in a nutshell. They go from Wentz to Nick Foles. The offense has taken a little bit of a step down, and nonetheless, Eagles have that great defense. And I've spent most of the week looking at kind of how the Vikings' offense matches up against the Eagles' defense. I want to flip it a little bit here with you and talk about how the Vikings' defense matches up against the Eagles. And I want to start in the secondary. You've got all these weapons for the Eagles on offense. They've got Alshon Jeffrey as their number one receiver. Then they've got Torrey Smith, Nelson Agholor. But they've also got Zach Ertz, and they've got plenty of pass catchers. So, Luke, how do you see the Vikings' secondary being able to stack up against that group?
Yeah, it's a good question, Seth. And I think first and foremost, you know, Mike Zimmer and both these teams, they're going to do everything they can to stop the run first. And I think both teams are going to be able to do that pretty successfully. Then you put the game in your quarterback's hands. We're talking about Nick Foles, again, throwing to, on paper, I think Xavier Rhodes matches up very well against Alshon Jeffrey, a guy that, you know, has made some nice catches against Rhodes when he was a young cornerback, still developing, still hadn't even really got under Coach Zimmer's grasp yet or wing. But they're both familiar with each other going back to the Chicago days. I think, though, again, on paper, you have to like that matchup. Xavier Rhodes is kind of one of those guys that you can just put on any team's number one receiver and, for the most part, shut them down. We saw Michael Thomas, you know, again, catch some outstanding passes, really, from Drew Brees that really were uncoverable. But at the end of the day, Xavier Rhodes, for the most part, got the best of Michael Thomas. I expect the same with Alshon Jeffrey. Moving along, Trey Waynes, I think, matches up really well, again, on paper, with Torrey Smith, their speedster. Very similar to, again, last week, Trey Waynes, you match him up on the speedster like Ted Ginn. I think that's Waynes is, you know, and although I kind of knack Waynes quite a bit still on some underneath stuff, he's so quick and so fast that any vertical routes, he's pretty much glued to the hip. And I think Torrey Smith has really made his money in the NFL on those vertical routes. I really like the matchup, again, with Trey Waynes. Where I get worried, though, Seth, is the slot, because this league now is really a passing league, and you know, you can spread them out 3, 4, 5 wide. If you don't have cornerbacks that can cover that third, fourth, and fifth wide receiver, trust me, a quarterback or an offensive coordinator will find that mismatch. Nelson Agholor is their slot receiver, a guy who was drafted from the first round from USC, Biletnikoff Award winner back at the time. I think this is his third year now. Struggled right out the gate, but this year they just stuck him in the slot, and he really got going. And I think he's a guy that can really make a lot of big plays for you. And when I saw Mac Alexander, a guy who I'm still very high on in the future, it's going to take him a while to develop, but I think I got a little worried and I'm a little scared going into this next week, because Mac Alexander, I don't want to use the word exposed, but he certainly was beat on not just one, but quite a few, you know, third and long situations and for some big chunk plays too. So Nelson Agholor, if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm looking at Agholor on Mac Alexander. Of course, Terrence Newman's going to be in the mix. He will help. But you just can't count on Terrence Newman to do everything for you. You know, it's kind of just a bonus when you get Newman playing as good as he is. That is the number one matchup for me. Again, I think Jeffrey will be locked down on Rhodes for most of the game. Don't get me wrong, he's going to catch 2-3 passes. Yeah. But I don't think he's going to have that home run, you know, kind of touchdown catch. Waynes is great with the long speed of Torrey Smith, but Mac Alexander and Nelson Aguilar worries me a little bit. I think you need to try to do whatever you can to help Mac out and limit Nelson Aguilar's big plays.
Looking at one piece of the secondary who could be very key and has been a little bit of a question mark this week, that, of course, Andrew Sendejo. And sounds like he's progressing through the concussion protocol, hasn't officially been cleared as of yet. But if the Vikings are forced to use a guy like Anthony Harris to fit in that spot, how confident are they that he'll be able to step into that role and succeed?
Yeah, well, it's a great question again, and I think it sounds like Sendejo's going to be a green light, but with the concussion stuff nowadays, you just never know. You can't count on it until it's go time on Sunday. But I think they think Anthony Harris won't skip a beat. I know when it comes down to making the right calls and making the right adjustments in gameplay, Anthony Harris, he's just as good as Sendejo in that area. And he's also made some big plays when it counted, too. You remember the Rams game, punched a ball loose against Cooper Kupp at the goal line, a huge play there. And then going back to the Saints game, third and one, made a great play in run support coming down in the box and making a huge third down stop, ultimately probably saved the game, to be honest. So I have loved what Andrew Sendejo's done this year. He's been one of my biggest, I think, player improvements from the beginning of the year to now, outside of maybe Anthony Barr. From last year to this year. Maybe Anthony Barr, but Andrew Sendejo, he's just flying around the field. And he's really been, you know, as much as Harrison Smith gets a lot of that Joker label where he can just line up wherever he wants and fly over the field, Sendejo's really doing the same thing as well. And he's maybe not the big name like Harrison Smith, but he's been so productive. And he's physical, too. You've seen all year some really big hits, no matter who it is. You remember the big hit on Mike Wallace and the Raven game, and I think he might have got fined for that, but even though everybody came out and said that was a legal hit, Sendejo, I think that would be a huge blow to lose him in such a critical game like this that's going to come down to ultimately a lot of physical defensive play. Sendejo's another guy that you don't want to lose. I think he'll get the green light, and I think he'll make a huge difference too.
Outstanding. Luke, I just want to open things up a little bit for you here. Who is maybe, or what are a couple of matchups in this game? Can be on both either side of the ball. What are some matchups that you are really looking forward to seeing in this game?
Yeah, I mentioned that Nelson Aguilar on Mac Alexander. That's what I would target, at least right away. See where Mac's at, a young kid on a championship game like this. See where his head's at. But on the other side of the ball, Seth, you always want to find the weakest link. I mean, this game, especially in the playoffs, we see it every year, is all about the mismatch. I just try to find one mismatch. That's why the Patriots are so good, too, in the playoffs, because they get Gronkowski on a linebacker out wide, and it's impossible to stop. I think you're looking at the Eagles' left tackle. Ever since Jason Peters went out, an outstanding offensive tackle, they got Vitae now in at left tackle, and he's been okay. He's been, you know, I think better than what people were expecting the drop-off to be, but he's going to have to play Everson Griffin, arguably the best defensive end in the league, and I think that's the matchup that I want to not only focus on, but I want to attack Vitae in multiple different angles and lanes and gaps, and that means overloading that left side. So not only is he going to get Griffin in his face, but throw some stunts and twists in there, as well as getting Anthony Barr or Harrison Smith or Andrew Sendejo lined up in that other gap and really try to, again, put a lot of pressure on that left tackle and that blind side of Nick Foles. I think that's a huge mismatch because, again, when you look at the offense for the Eagles, I think Vitae is by far their weakest link on paper, and you just want to try to expose that as much as you can.
Luke, let's take a look at Case Keenum as well. And Keenum had some ups and downs, certainly, during the game against the Saints. He had the interception where he just was trying to avoid pressure, put the ball up, and it ended up being picked off. But then one of the maybe the best throws I've seen all season where he put that ball for Diggs to catch on the game-winning score. Do you think Keenum has gotten the nerves out of his system in his first playoff game now under his belt, or is Philadelphia on the road going to present a difficult opportunity for him to succeed on Sunday?
You know, you can do as much preparation as you want all week, all month. You go back to training camp and OTAs and off-season workouts, things like that. But I just don't think there's any type of situation that you can replicate that's going to give you the kind of practice reps that you need to prepare for a situation on this stage where the lights are the brightest that Case Keenum's ever seen. So unfortunately, and maybe I'm being a little pessimistic, I don't think the nerves are going to be out of Case Keenum, and that's okay too. I mean, everybody should have some butterflies before this game, but I'm with you that he's made some really head-scratching throws, you know, nearly every game, actually. Some inaccurate throws downfield, some throws that nobody should even be thinking about throwing. I'll say this, though, for the most part this year, he's gotten away with them. And I always say that, you know, he looks like he's playing with magic. Hopefully the magic doesn't run out, but I think he's a guy that, you know, kind of like a Brett Favre, he's going to throw some really bad interceptions, but you're going to take the good with the bad.
Yep.
Because he's making so many plays, not only in the pocket, but outside the pocket too. So you're right, man. You know, something that I looked up, I was watching his Houston tape from college, and he put up video game numbers, man. That was a spread system that let him sling the rock, 45 touchdowns, just 5 interceptions. But in his last game of his career, nobody talks about this, in a bowl game, he threw 6 interceptions. And
ooh,
it's one of those situations where, you know, this is the biggest game of his collegiate career. You want to go out on top. You know all the scouts are watching. And you lay an egg. And I know the Vikings, and specifically Pat Shurmur, has done a phenomenal job this year of putting Case in great situations to succeed, unlike that Houston game where he probably felt like he had to do everything and put the whole game on his shoulders. That's not going to be the case, not only Sunday, but it hasn't been the case all year. So I think Shurmur's going to continue to find different ways to, again, help Case Keenum not have to make those crazy pressure throws and things like that. But it's huge, though, Seth, because, you know, we talk about these crazy throws. This game, and not to pull it the cliche, but it will come down to turnovers. And you hope you can force a couple off Nick Foles, but you just don't want Case Keenum to, you know, if a ball gets tipped or something, nothing you can do, but you just don't want him, you know, thrown across his body again in the middle of the field like he did last week, or throwing a lame duck up in the air, you know, with 2 defenders in the area. So hopefully you don't get those. And again, you got to take the good with the bad. He's made some great splash plays and home run throws with the same mentality. I don't really expect that to change much. You just hope, again, that the magic doesn't run out, because Case Keenum's certainly been playing with magic this year.
Yeah, he has, that's for sure. Looking at just the game overall, I'm kind of going between, in my head, something like a 24-10, 24-13 score. I think the defense will come away with a touchdown, which will help take a little pressure off the offense, but I just think it's going to be tough for Nick Foles to get much done when the defense is going to be selling out against the run and forcing him to beat him. What is your gut feeling about what we'll see from the Vikings on Sunday?
Yeah, for sure, man. I keep going back and forth, back and forth. Listen, I think on paper, and I think everybody knows that this isn't like a Rube talking or a biased opinion. I think on paper, most people know that the Vikings are probably a better team top to bottom. And I think ultimately they end up circling back to the wagon of quarterback. Saying that, you still got to go out and you still got to execute. You still got to go play the game. And we know in pressure situations like this in the past, and that's all we can go off of, the Vikings have struggled in these situations. And we, you know, hopefully this is a different team, quote-unquote different team under Zimmer. He can break these curses. And hopefully it doesn't come down to a kick, because we know how that always turns out for us. But I think ultimately, though, I think the Vikings are going to be able to move. Listen, both teams want to run the ball, and I don't think either team's going to be very effective at it. I think both teams are going to be able to move the ball, though, at least into the red zone. Once it gets in the red zone, though, things tighten up, things clamp up, and I don't know if Nick Foles or Case Keenum are going to have the guts to really make some tight throws in tight windows, as opposed to taking the safe option, maybe a check down or scrambling for a couple yards and letting, you know, Kai Forbath get you 3 points and then go and let your defense do the rest. I got this game 16-9, a lot of field goals. Again, both teams getting in the red zone a lot, but getting, you know, kind of defenses clamped down once they get there. 16-9 Vikings, again, a low-scoring game. I know the weather is saying that, hey, you should be able to move the ball or throw the ball if you want. But, you know, 5:40 kickoff. Once that sun goes down, things get a lot colder in Philly. And I think, again, this is going to be, at least for that first half, one of those games where both teams are just kind of playing a little stalemate, a little, chess back and forth, and seeing which team's going to make the mistake first. Neither team's going to want to make that big mistake first. So 16-9, I think it's going to be kind of a slugfest. You're going to win this game in the trenches. And again, I think the team that limits the turnovers ultimately is going to win this game.
Love it. Luke, can't thank you enough for joining the show here. Awesome stuff. And for the listeners, if you want to view Luke's work, you can go to Zone Coverage and check it out. Luke does some great stuff covering the Vikings for Zone Coverage, so encourage the listeners to check that out. We'll definitely have to have you back on here throughout the rest of this playoff run and into the off season as well. But thanks for stopping by. We'll see if the Vikings can bring it home.
Seth, hold on. Before I head out, you did say the you're predicting a Vikings defensive touchdown. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
I got to know, who is it in your head that keeps playing and that's running into the end zone for the Vikes defensively? Who you got? What kind of defensive touchdown you got?
That would be none other than Harry the Hitman.
Yeah, I knew it. Harry, man. And are we talking a strip sack, scoops and score? Or are we talking just a smooth, silky pick six?
I'm going the pick six route. I think he's going to eye down one, and Foles will not be able to let up. Harry takes it the rest of the way.
Hey, I'll tell you what, man. Harry has been really good against some the below average quarterbacks this year at reading, reacting, and making some interceptions. I think back to the Brett Hundley games, both in the Metrodome, the Bank, and then and then in Green Bay as well. He had two interceptions in those games. So Harry, man, he's been very good. Obviously, always good and dangerous in the box, but it seems like this year he's kind of taken his pass coverage duties to the next step. So I would love to see that as well, man. So hopefully we can bring it home, like you said. And absolutely, Seth, I'd love to come back and talk Vikes with you, hopefully next week.